You can have all the money in your hand, all the possessions anyone can ever have, but it's all worth your treasure. True worth is only measured not by what you got, but what you got in your heart. You can have everything, but what is it? What is it?
Never had it so good. 101.1 Radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good. Radio now on 101.1 and it's 24/7. The world's best radio station.
In this day and time, stereotypes are the false descriptions for all of humanity. James T. Deshaies is the author of two great poetry books that attempt to describe life from a male perspective. It has been a common belief that men are unable to put into words their deepest feelings and spend most of their time focused on the surface of what life means. Thoughts, love, and reflections, and passion, desire, and contemplation take you on a journey that has very few travelers. Mr. Deshaies has opened his heart and spirit up in ways that few have ever experienced. The depth of his poetry will have you reading his books and poems over and over again. You will find yourself using his passages to describe your own feelings to your family and friends. It is now time to put aside your thoughts and feelings related to the depth of men's thoughts and delve deeply into the words of James T. Deshaies. Once again, he will put an end to your thoughts that men can't translate their heartfelt spirit into words. Both of these books will allow you to find comfort in the reality of the heart of men. You will spend hours trying to embrace the way men want to love and display their passion to the women they love. Don't be fooled by those books that create love through words of lust, vulgarity, and unhealthy displays of sexual activities. You will discover the types of words that will allow you to rejoice in the future of what love truly means to men. Your book clubs and families will be able to discuss these words without fear. No one will have to leave the room. Both of these books can be purchased at jamestdeshaies2.com and lulu.com. Feel free to reach out to the author at tlreflectionsjtd@gmail.com.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. We are here with you as every day, proud of the opportunity to talk about what is going on in our society. Presently, we're going to talk to Mr. Higgins about the issues that we have with incarceration. How are you doing today, Mr. Higgins?
I'm doing fine, Mr. Deshaies. How you doing?
All right, Mr. Higgins, I wanted to give out a little information before we get started. Presently, the United States of America incarcerates more people than any other country in the world. We presently have, if you count the federal prisons and state prisons and jails, a little over 2 million people incarcerated. Many of those who are going to be at some point released and coming back in society. So it's important that we have some type of discussion related to what it is that you do with these people. How do you prepare them to get back, come back into society? And how do you help them not to reoffend so they can return to jail? It is said that
right.
We have a very low success rate related to keeping people out of prison once they have gotten into the system. So I'm going to turn it over to you. What are your thoughts related to that, and how do we do a better job of helping people prepare for freedom outside of the jail system?
That's a very good question. Well, first of all, we have to start understanding the reasons why they went there in the first place. But, you know, when we set that aside, you know what I'm saying, we have to realize the challenges that they're faced with as on return into society. Many of them don't have identification. Many of them have weak ties to their family. Many of them don't have any money and don't have any shelter, housing. And, you know, the scanty services, you know, that the state offers, or, you know, through, you know, welfare, food stamps, it's not enough to, you know, sustain someone to be able to make the transition, to be able to make the appointments, to obtain a birth certificate, to obtain a Social Security card, to obtain these things so they could actually transition to society and have a chance to be amicable. So what happens is that the inability to access these things and sustain themselves often leads, you know, formerly incarcerated individuals, you know what I'm saying, to susceptible to a life of crime again. And it's not, you know, in terms of the fact that they actually want to be involved in this type of crime, but it's in terms of the survival mechanism. You know, crime in itself is a survival mechanism. So when you have individuals, you know what I'm saying, we have to resort to that means of survival, then, you know, you know what I mean? We have to realize that once they become released, that these means of survival this means of survival is even more scarce. And, you know, we have to create avenues and resources that strengthen the resources that are already there. There are programs and there's many things that are supposed to assist inmates, formerly incarcerated individuals, as they transition into society. But many of these programs fall short on, you know, in terms about the effectively, you know, helping these men and women transition. So it was up to us in terms about the population, in terms about our community, and start, creating our own organizations, you know what I'm saying, to help, you know what I'm saying, with the transition, you know, holding these organizations accountable, talking to our local politicians in terms about what are their positions on in terms about creating avenues for these people to come into society, because, you know, our local politicians should be helping these young individuals obtain employment. You know, these are things that, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, that the, our local politicians, they're our request of what we need. They're to serve our needs, the public. So if our needs is the public is for our formerly incarcerated people to have employment, then, you know what I'm saying, our public officials should be that should be their stance. So these are the things that we have to do as a community to get involved, so that we can so we can alleviate some of these pressures on these, because these formerly incarcerated people are our family members, they are our loved ones, and people can be incarcerated for many different reasons, you know what I mean? And so, you know, and it's, you know, so we, you know what I'm saying, you know, we don't need to vilify people just because they were incarcerated. You know what I mean? And this is one of the reasons why we have to, we have to start thinking about why are we the face of crime and start removing our face from being the face of crime. It's not only we the face of crime and actual crime, we the face of crime and interpretations of crime in terms about, you know, movies and television shows and reenactments and things of that nature. So we have to start be selective about the roles, what we allow our children to see and what we project in of ourselves, because it's easy to vilify us in terms about, okay, it's all right to arrest them, it's all right to incarcerate them, you know, and they already did the crime, you know, you don't really need much evidence on them. And this is not true. You know, we live in the United States where, you know, you have to have jurisprudence. So, you know, these things, you know, we have to be active in our community, and, you know, so we can hold the police accountable, because the police are not supposed to have our communities under siege. See, if you notice, if you live in a community where the people are homeowners, it doesn't matter where in this country, if you live in a community where people are homeowners, the police do not ride through the communities like it's under siege. The community only come to the community in the poor communities where the apartment dwellers are at. Where the apartments, so even there are homes, and the homes are topped up into apartments. They come to the communities where apartment dwellers are at. They come to the communities where projects are at. They come to the community because, see, the homeowners are landowners. They're taxpayers. So they don't come to it. They only come to those communities, the homeowners' communities, on a call. Someone has to call them. But other than that, they ride past those communities. But they police our community. They police the urban communities. They police the communities with the low income. They police the apartment dwellers. And this is what we have to cease to let these people come into our communities and actually agitate and create situations, you know, in terms about so they can make themselves viable. So these are the things that we have to do, and we have to understand that the people that come home, that we need to actually be really effective and be empathetic to their needs in terms about from their coming home, if we don't want them to reoffend.
And, you know, it is, when you say that you incarcerate 20 million people, it says that the society needs to do somewhat of a better job trying to get these people acclimated to freedom prior to them being arrested. Seemingly, we are not doing as good a job as we need to be doing related to training our kids and getting them prepared to deal with adulthood and a lot of issues. You know, we got a lot of people locked up for minor crimes. We have a lot of people locked up for violence, unable to control their emotions. And so how do we deal with helping young people to avoid incarceration in the beginning?
Well, if you truly want to alleviate that remedy that situation, you have to start having people accountable as they create relationships. Many of these people are incarcerated. Why? Because they come from weak family structures. Why do they come from weak family structures? Because the relationships that that they were created from were weak in itself. And why were they weak? Because the community is weak. The economic base of the community is weak. So we have to start realizing that, you know what I'm saying, in terms of if you want to go to the nucleus, you want to go to the root, you don't want to sugarcoat it, go to the root. Men and women stop having to stop hooking up and stop playing games because they're creating children. And if you're not ready to have these children, then you know what I'm saying, you shouldn't be in a position or even playing around with creating children, because now, you know what I'm saying, this is what he called the burden of society, because now, you know what I'm saying, you created a child, and now this child is not even prepared emotionally or psychologically to deal with society. And couple that with a substandard education, you know what I mean, we have to hold that also accountable. You know, why do our kids have to have scholarships for medical studies and things of that nature in terms of our high school and the high school level, when there's schools that have specialized schools in other communities where these things are prevalent or ongoing? You know, where you have hospital programs and other specialized schools, these need to be going on in our schools. We need to be training our – they're purposely maneuvering our children to the bottom by giving them the inadequate education. So by giving them inadequate education – and this is the reason for immigration, because why? The inadequate education opens up the industry for why? For the labor market, and the labor market is being fought by immigrants. This is not a disrespect to immigrants or nobody else. This is a manipulation of the labor market. So we got to understand what our position in the labor market is. We are losing the labor market because we're not preparing our fruit. We're not preparing our children to be adequate to be even participating in the labor market. So this is what we have to do. We have to start creating our families and start realizing that you cannot play with meeting a man and a woman, because these produce children. These children are not a joke. And these children, they're angry. Are you talking to them? You speaking to them? They know their products are a lack of love. They know their products of a night hookup at the club. They know it. They don't even want to admit it. It hurts them, and that's why they self-sabotage themselves. You know, I work with them. I'm with them, so I understand what's going on. And so this is what we have to do as adults. You know what I'm saying? We asking them to do things that we're not doing ourselves. You know what I mean? And we're telling, you know what I'm saying? We tell them, say, well, go do this, but we're over here doing that. So they saying, why should I do that? You know what I mean? We created a culture in our community where it's black is being street. No, black used to be being an African American was being black, and street was being street. But they've coalesced the two. Why have they created the two? Why? So they can feed this prison complex. You know, our children are feeding the prison complex. You know, the prison industries are being traded on the stock market. So when you're trading, you know what I'm saying, put the stocks on the stock market, you have to insure a product. And they've insured a product through this decadent lifestyle that they've introduced to our community. You know what I mean? And it's breeding more and more dysfunction. And it didn't just start, but it's climaxing at this point. And it's up to us, you know what I'm saying, to really get involved. And you know what I'm saying? And actually, and this show is a start, because, you know what I'm saying, it starts, you have to talk about it. See, in other communities, they have these things called think tanks. Think tanks where they talk about things so they can create solutions for things before the problem created. So we have to start creating think tanks in our community. And you know what I'm saying? We have to start, you know what I'm saying, we have to start using the church. It's not a showcase to, you know, show off your outfit and who got the greatest choir and battle from choir to choir and things, this, that, and the other. We have to start using these churches as for what they were supposed to do, as being a focal point of edification in our community. And you know what I'm saying? They're not. Never mind, you know what I'm saying, the religion or this, that, and the other, whatever religion may be, whether it be Islam or Christianity or whatever it may be, we have to start, these places have to start being epicenters of altruism, have to be epicenters of things that, you know what I'm saying, create, you know what I'm saying, tumescent effect, swelling effect in our community, where is that people are behaving in a manner in terms about helping each other. In our community, one of the things, biggest problem in the black communities is that we don't believe in ourselves. We don't support each other, and we don't believe in ourselves. We don't believe it until someone puts a whole bunch of money behind it. You know what I mean? We won't listen to it. We won't participate in it until somebody puts a bunch of money behind it. Why? Because we are insecure, and we, as surreptitious, we want success. We're seeking success. We're so insecure. We're seeking success. So why you could put a reverend who's you could make a rapper a reverend, and next thing you know, everyone wants to hear what this guy has to say, but you've never throughout his career ever heard him quote scripture. So this is the problem. You understand what I'm saying? And and it's not about me attacking any of these people. It's about seeing the simplicity in our community and how we hold someone who we don't know and so much high self esteem, and the people that we see in our community working hard, putting in the work, rolling up their sleeves, doing what they got to do in our community, and we're not assisting them. We'll see somebody in our community go hand out food, go hand out bags, school gifts, this, that, and other, and we'll laugh at them, but why are we not standing there with them? And if they put it on Facebook, so what? They put it on Facebook. You know why? Because people need to see us doing something positive. We need to change our image. Our kids are showing so much. Our kids right now, we upset with our kids. We can only be upset with ourselves because they are showing us what we show them. You know what I mean? So it's up to us, and then we're going to continue this complex of receiving people from in prison. Why? Because, you know what I'm saying? Because why? We not doing nothing to nullify prior to.
And I recognize that, you know, we have a situation that is not going to change overnight. And when we have people like the present administration in, a lot of assistance related to helping inmates who are returning to our communities has to be done locally. So how do you encourage people locally and in their churches to open their arms up to people who have victimized them?
I'm going to give them an incentive. Right now, regardless of the administration in Washington and in local governments, there's millions of dollars for reentry programs. Millions of dollars. See, someone has already seen 15, 20 years ago that these inmates that they are called mass incarcerated a long time ago were going to be released, and they were going to need cell phones, they were going to need debit cards, they were going to need housing, they were going to need everything to transition into the 21st century. So what they did, what the federal government did, they allocated funds for these programs. So the thing about it is that these churches, you know what I'm saying, who already have a board of directors, who already have a 501c3, you know what I'm saying? They could create programs where they could transition these people into being productive citizens, because the church can't be upset with the children when the church failed the children in the first place. You understand what I'm saying? For the simple fact that this is an institution inside the community. If this institution inside the community didn't reach out, didn't actively to reach out and create a conduit for these children to have a better way, then they cannot say anything about why these children went in the wayward way. Because what happens is that's the point of the church. That's the point of it. You know what I'm saying? If you look at the history of the black church, the history of the black church was more than just have a sermon on Sunday, sing, and then go home and go eat a chicken sandwich and go home. You know what I mean? It was all about being active in the community, making sure, networking, making sure that this person got, you know, work with this person, with this business, work with this business, keeping the businesses thriving, and it's no longer doing it. Now it's just places for people to be pompous and ex-sophisticated and try to outdo each other in terms about status. But no, we need to roll our sleeves up. We need to do what created that civil rights movement. Tomorrow's Martin Luther King's birthday. What created that civil rights movement? It was the churches. It was them being active. And you know what I'm saying? And everybody wasn't passive. You had this group called the Deacons for Defense. They weren't passive. You know what I mean? So, you know, we have to understand that, you know, people were working and working and working. You had Gloria Richardson, you know what I'm saying, from Cambridge, Maryland. They were active, you know what I'm saying, working in the civil rights movement. We have to acknowledge a woman who just passed, who Oprah just acknowledged, or who Recy Taylor. She was the pinnacle reason for the civil rights movement, because Rosa Parks came and helped her when she was raped by six white men in the state of Alabama, where in person to prosecute them. So Rosa Parks went to her aid to try to get her justice, and when Rosa Parks sat on that bus, that's when everybody ran to Rosa Parks, because they recognized her for helping this woman, Recy Taylor. So we have to know our history. We have to know what's going on. And once we know all these pieces and we can put these pieces together, then we can adequately, you know, say, start ameliorating the effect. Because we could thank the present administration, because if it wasn't for the present administration, we wouldn't be getting off our butts and trying to do something and realizing something bad is about to happen. You know what I mean? So, you know what I'm saying? When you say Donald Trump, we appreciate him. You know what I mean? Because if he wasn't, it wouldn't be a few bits of us trying to do something. You know what I'm saying? Because other than that, because we've been supposed to be doing this through the Obama administration, through the Bush administration, through the Clinton administration, through every administration. We lost it because we let the power to them. These politicians serve us. They're supposed to be workers of the people, not workers of big business and lobbyists. And that's what we don't realize. And it's just not just the black community. It's all everybody's community. But, you know, we since we get the crumbs and they get the loaves of bread, man, you know, the crumbs is getting lighter and lighter and lighter. So you know what I'm saying? So we need to start working and being active and stop begging and, you know what I'm saying, asking for stuff and start working and making sure that we get our fair slice of the pie.
All right. We're going to take a short break and come back and allow people to ask questions or make statements and figure out what it is that we need to be doing to assist our children as they return home from incarceration.
You know I love music. And every time I hear something hot, it makes me want to move. Makes me wanna have fun, but it's something about this joint right here. This joint right here, it makes me wanna.
Shea, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. Mr. Higgins, will you please, just before I give the audience an opportunity to ask questions or make statements, could you please give them a little bit of your background and what is it that motivated you while you were incarcerated and that is keeping you motivated after incarceration? Are you there, Mr. Higgins?
Hello? Hello, Mr. DeShea, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, well, I guess I'm, you know, I'll give you my accolades and then I tell you, you know, well, I have a master's degree. I'm a substitute teacher. I work with kids. And, I work in the community with elderly, everyone. You know, I work with, you know, just all age groups. And, you know, prior to that, basically, you know, I, my former life, you know, I lived a life of crime. I grew up, you know, as a child, you know, with limited options. You know what I mean? And for me, the only option I saw was, you know, the criminal option. You know what I mean? And at that time, crime wasn't looked at in the black community as something that was 100% bad. It was looked at as something in the black community was response for black men who couldn't make it in mainstream society, who weren't allowed to make it in that society. And it was a reaction to not being able to make it as society, and it was its own culture. This culture has been glamorized and packaged and given to another generation as something to do. Anyone who's really lived this life would tell you that this is nothing really to live, and you know is you know, and I would tell you destroyed my family. You know, it altered the course of my life, you know, and I wouldn't, you know, suggest this for anyone, you know, but at the same token, you know, it's unfortunate because someone would say, well, how did you become a criminal when your father's a teacher I imagine my mother that. So the thing about it is to say that, you know, it can happen to anyone. This situation can happen to anyone. And, you know, no matter if you, you know, I say, well, my kid, you know, is going to school and doing the right thing and this, that, and the other. Anytime a child needs money, anytime a child needs a feeling of success or feeling of position or feeling of belonging, he will gravitate towards it if he's not getting that in some form or fashion in his current surroundings, in his family life. So I'm just a byproduct of society. You know, I was raised in an institutional system as a child. You know, so you know, from 7 years old, so I wasn't reared at home. I didn't disappoint my mother. I didn't, you know, break her heart and go into the streets. And this is another thing we have to look at, the group home children. We have a lot of kids going to group because I was a group home child. And we got a lot of kids going through group homes who don't have any attachment, who are disenfranchised from childhood. You know what I'm saying? Who are given medications, who put in specialized schools and things of that nature. Because I went through that. I went to different schools and this, that, and the other. Why? Because I was in special education. Now I went through all of that to be able to come now and to be and now to be able to teach. And, you know, the crime is well. Why wasn't those attributes being harnessed and being nurtured when I was a youth? Why? Because it was a lapse. It was a gap. You know what I'm saying? And it was a gap between the elders. Somewhere in the elders, you know what I'm saying, they didn't invest in our children. And that's why I'm on a mission to make sure that we invest in our children so this gap gets closed, because we don't need another lost generation, you know what I'm saying, just the way I became a victim of a lost generation.
You had a guest that you were going to bring on to talk about their experience. Have they made it on the air?
I'm not sure. I didn't really know how the guests, you know, how it was going. I told them to call in. I don't know if they're on the line.
What's the name?
Ock.
Okay.
678 is the area code.
And you said Ox?
Yeah. Uh huh.
Okay, I don't have another 678. Cheryl, what are your thoughts in regard to whether or not we are, as a society, are paying enough attention to the fact that we're putting all these people in jail, and at some point they're going to be getting out?
Good evening, everyone, and how's everyone doing? Good evening, Mr. Higgins. You know, we have to be prepared because if inmates, once they're released, if there's no form of rehabilitating them once they get out, some kind of program that they can go into to help them to do the transition back into society, then they're going to wind up doing the same thing that they did to get them back in. And that's what a majority of them. Some of them will have learned their lesson, and many of them may not have learned. But I do believe that it is important that we do something, you know. And actually, while they're incarcerated, it's probably a good time to have the program, because as we notice on the outside, more and more programs is cut off. I heard Mr. Higgins mention about some funding available that I'm pretty sure a lot of people are not even aware of. So I think that, you know, one of the things that he's doing, you know, spreading the word is excellent. And another thing, you know, we talk about all the time is that raising our child in the way that they should go. And not saying that they want part from it, but we always know that they have a way of turning back to what they do know and what they did learn. And sometimes it's just by a learning experience do they find themselves in prison. But I do believe that it is necessary that there are some programs set in place to help the individuals that's getting out and transitioning back into society.
We know that you've dealt with a lot of issues that had you to step back and get in a controlled environment. Why is it that we seem to be willing to commit more time and effort to people restoring their lives by creating these drug rehabilitation centers, but don't have incarceration and rehabilitation process?
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you, Mr. Higgins, for coming on the show, sharing your experiences and strengths that you have obtained through those experiences, and the hope that you have for our future generation. I like to call the future generations, our future generation, the Black Millennials.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Higgins spoke about how it's time for us to put on, to get involved in the think tank one more time. Because Ms. Cheryl spoke about this gap, that we seemingly have fallen through. But one of the main things pertaining to your question, Jane, that she spoke of is the transition. And the transition, even the transition house or the transition process. Mr. Higgins spoke a lot about the the accessibility of the church in our community. And in retrospect, if you look back in time in the 50s and the 60s, how the black church was the pillar of our community. They made sure that we stayed on task on what the prize was, and that prize at that time was obtaining our civil rights. They knew the importance of us being able to obtain an education, so that we can be in position in the way of doctors, lawyers, teachers, and things of that sort, and the accessibility to help others to come up the ladder. Now, in all of that, I want to say this before I go to my next point real quick. When Mr. Higgins spoke about the present administration, and I actually embraced the sentiment that it is a blessing in disguise. The current administration is a blessing in disguise, because what it's supposed to do, and hopefully what it does, it jolts us back into reality of what we're supposed to be doing for one another and for the community, because what we have done we have fallen victim to the rhetoric or the mindset that has been imposed upon us for way too long. Case in point, if the legalization of marijuana were to happen, that would be the worst that can happen to our community, because we are already distracted. And when it comes down to a point of trying to find a reason to move forward, the white power structure, if I can call it that, because that's what Jose Williams and Dr. King used to call it, the white power structure would love nothing more but for us to be distracted one more time. But what this current administration is supposed to do is supposed to be our atomic bomb. But even before we get to the actual atomic energy, this is supposed to be so devastating for us that we are supposed to galvanize and be paying attention well enough. And still, we are still that 20% of black people that's really paying attention. The other 80% is not paying any attention. Now, we have said it vice versa, where the 20% is not paying attention, but I beg to differ. I think 80% is not paying attention well enough to where even the churches are supposed to be in position to help these black men, especially when they get out of jail, to be in a position to help out and get the younger children and young adults to know that if you do exactly what I did, or even to a lesser extent, you will be wasting your time that you really can't get back. And so it's important that we start paying attention. And Mr. Higgins, again, I'm sorry to be long-winded, James. Thanks for your help and thanks for your efforts. Bye.
Cassie, you have benefited from someone being able to turn their life around. What are your thoughts here about us not committing enough resources to helping people change their lives after they've spent time incarcerated?
Good afternoon, Mr. James Deshay.
Hello.
Captain Dunn, can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, this is Kathy's husband. Yeah, I'm the beneficiary of this relationship. But my wife, my lovely wife. And me too, I was incarcerated, 14 years in prison, first-time offender. And like the young man spoke earlier, just a victim of the community and just what I was up against in the neighborhood. And I took that road. I had a choice, but I took that road. But to make a long story short, like he said, it's programs out there when you get out, and you have to have your mind made up before you come outside those walls to get a plan in process. And have for me, myself, I had 6 months halfway house. And I recommend anybody to get that 6 months halfway house because it's an adjustment to get back out into the streets where when you leave that halfway house to have an itinerary, what you're going to do. Don't waste any time. Execute every minute you got to do stuff because they hold you accountable when you go out. And you gotta have at least one or two persons to help you because it's hard if you get out here by yourself and you don't have any help at all. But you got to be consistent on working and working. Get you a job. It's not saying you're going to stay in that job. And it's hard to find a job when you're an offender because if you got five applications, you have somebody that says they've been to jail, you're going to automatically execute that one, get it out the way. So they have programs out. When I got out 20-some years ago where they had they would bond these people $25,000 just to hire you. So it's all kind of programs out here, like he said, that's funding. And you just have to do your research, and you have to get out here and be consistent and have a plan. And it will work, and be patient.
Let me just ask you, Mr. Jones, what was your plan related to your spiritual side? How did that play when you originally came out? Because I tell a lot of my inmates that they need to find a church and become a part of a church home. Was that told to you, or how did that happen for you?
Well, as the young lady spoke earlier about, teach your kids at a young age and they won't depart. I grew up in the church, but when I came home, I still had a mentality of doing things my way. My wife, at the time, I used to get a four-hour pass on Sunday to go to church. And my wife would tell me, come on, go to church. I say, all I need is the pass from you. Give me the pass to show that I went to church. And she said, I'm not giving you the pass. You got to start coming to church. So to make a long story short, I went to church one day. I told my wife, I'm not giving tithes. This man is taking my money. She said, well, baby, it's just like anything else you go to, you got to pay for air conditioning, clean bathrooms. You got to pay for a clean place, parking, all this stuff, that aspect. So I said, well, okay. Well, he does a good word. So I got convicted. I got baptized, you know, because the word was so good, the Holy Spirit hit me. And after that, we went to another church, and I just been walking with the Lord ever since. I mean, he has blessed me time and time again. I've had several businesses. I've been successful in everything that I put my mind to with the blessing of the Lord because I've been doing it his way. And me and my wife started attending the church, just minding our business, attending a church, a powerful church. I'm talking about a church that's active, that's actual active. This is a grown folks church. We have men and children. So I'm going to tell you, this is a growing church. We have active children and active men. I mean, you come in this church, men run this church. And these people came and called me and my wife into the church to just show you how the Holy Spirit working. And they called us in there and asked me to become a deacon for the church. But to make a long story short, just because walking with the Lord and being obedient, I mean, that's the foundation that you're going to need to do anything successful. You have to have a relationship with Christ.
Amen.
All right, Mr. Higgins, I'm gonna ask you to talk about what he said about halfway houses. Is that a big part of our existence right now? Do everyone have access to a halfway house? You know, it's my understanding once they do a certain part of their time. They're just given a ticket to go home.
Well, I got someone on the line that can answer that better than myself. My brother, who just finished doing 13 years, he just left the halfway house. So if you let him chime in on that, he'll be able to give you know the actual details. But nothing. Yes.
Terrence, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, what what is your understanding of a halfway house and people's access to a halfway house?
Well, actually, when you come in the system, you have they give you up to 12 a year before you go home. Say your max out day is 2015. You got up to 12 months prior to that. They submit an application to the halfway house and ask them, you know, to see if they got some beds available for you. The halfway house replies back within, I'm going to say, it could be up to about 60 to 90 days, and they let the institution know that the case manager, he submit, he could put out, let's say the guy said he got 6 months halfway house. Your case manager who run your case, who do your caseload, he submitted and asked for, let's say he asked for 8 months. The halfway house will send back and say, nah, we could give him 6 months. Or he could shoot for 12 months. That means that he could get you out. You could go to the halfway 12 months earlier prior to your mandatory release date. Now, the halfway house might be crowded, so they try to get you in. They probably don't want to give you 12 months. They'll probably say, yeah, we'll take them, but we got to give them 6 months. So they accept you, they'll send a date for you to come to the halfway house 6 months, and you stay there for 6 months, you know. And once you get there, you got to get the job, and you got to get a pass, and I mean, and so on be it. But you still connected to the institution, because if you violate or do anything wrong, or whatever the case might be, the halfway house could send you back. Now, mind you, this is a privilege. This is not mandatory that they supposed to give you, because they could turn you down and say, nah, we'd rather not have them. So that means that it's either two things they could do. It's either you could shoot for another halfway house at another state and switch your address, or you could stay at the institution and max out, meaning doing your whole time. So that's how. But the halfway house is, some people turn the halfway house down and just rather just do the whole, so they don't have to keep in between of coming back or whatever, knowing that they're not going to do the right thing. But it also could help you prepare, so when you do get released after that 6 months, that you will be able to, you know, function and get a job. You'll be taken it's like a jump start for society or whatever. But in my case, I had 8 months. I had 8 months halfway house. I came out, I left the institution January 2016. I stayed in the halfway house. Yeah, 10 months. I stayed in the halfway house to October. I participated in finding a job. I participated in, you know, doing little services. And in October, I got fully released, to whereas I have to go back to the halfway house. So throughout the 10 months, I stayed consistently working jobs, different jobs here and there, and maintained of staying clear conduct with the halfway house, because if you don't, they will and they could send you back. And that's basically how it go. But as the guy say, who just the prior speaker, you do have to have some type of support. And if you don't, you have to research, and you have, because nothing come to you no more. A lot of these programs, they out there, but they not going to reach out to you. You got to reach out to them. And then the institution, some institutions is real aggressive with trying to help people when they do get out, and some is just not. And that's just how it goes. So you have to really have your support, and you have to just hit the ground running. You just got to stay focused, and, you know, it's going to be challenging. I'm going to tell you, if you don't have no support, or you have to have some type of support. If you don't, then you have to just go to the best thing and just stay resourced and stay because it is going to be very challenging. Now these days, it's very challenging. It's easy for you to get into any type of trouble or whatever the case might be. So pretty much I had some good support. My support team was right there with me, and they helped me all the way, and I just did the rest because that's what I wanted. Like, you have to want it. You have to want it, and you have to have it in your mind that you know, you don't want to go back. So with that being said, I just really, I did 13 years. So out of the 13 years, I stay active of being in programs. I stay active of reading. I stay active of doing researches on how to do things. I always believe that just because I was a convicted felon that I can't get no job. I never believed in that. I always believed in I could do it. I could make it happen. And once I have faith and I just, you know, continued on being aggressive with working here, doing more for less, you know, and putting my pride to the side and learning how to have patience, learning how to sacrifice. And, you know, Mr. Deshay, I like to admit that was the best thing that ever happened to me, was me being incarcerated. Reason why is because I've been in the streets a very long time. I'm 43 years old. I've been in the streets a very long time, you know, like my brother say. And, you know, I never really learned how to value. I never learned appreciation. I never had patience. I really never valued life or what it was worth. You know, I lived day by day. I just ran with the wrong people. I just, you know, and ended up in a lifestyle that, you know, I really liked and I really enjoyed. Now, I don't live with my regrets, but because I learned a lot from that part too. But as I was saying, I learned when I got incarcerated and did that 13, it really made me into a full-grown man. You know, taking responsibility for all actions, learning how to have patience, learning how to value life for what it's worth and not take it for granted. And, you know, not too many people. I saw a lot of people die from heart attacks that's young. I saw people get stabbed up. I've seen the worst. It was a real dark place at times. And I really thank God for making me go through that path of, you know, seeing all them type of things and learning and coming out smiling and, you know, and that's what really motivated me to not even want to go back, like, because it get worse. It's really worse than that. It's really worse, you know, and no laws is passing. People is praying in the law libraries hoping that they can get their case passed, and a lot of laws is not passing for them, and, you know, a lot of people don't got no family, and the administration, they not even trying to help, you know. And, you know, I lost my mom's, I came home 2016. I lost her on 15 of January. And, you know, I lost a lot of people, but my mom's was the closest thing to me. And, you know, she wrote me a letter, and she told me she's really trying to hang on and wait for me. You know, she was 83 years old. She raised me. And you know, and she kept writing her, you know, she wrote me all the way through it. And, you know, the last 4 or 5 years prior to that, her arthritis was bothering her, and, you know, she ain't had a strength no more. But the last letter was, I'm hanging on and I'm waiting for you. You know, I'm going to hang on long as it, and, you know, I keep that letter to that day. And things like that motivate me because I want my legacy to be different. I don't want to be known as Terrence, the guy who was in a drug life and, you know, did crimes and been incarcerated. I want her to be proud of me. I want her to look down at me and say, yeah, I came out and I made a change. And, you know, things like that, it enhances my motivation to thrive. Like, I want to be successful. And, you know, I want my legacy to be turned around and show up so I can show other people that come home that they could do it as well. You know, a lot of these jobs, people say, oh, they ain't going to hire me because I'm a felon. No. Whoever put that out there is not right. You know, that's a myth, man. They will hire you, you know, because you're worth it, you know. And and things like that. Like, I worked all through the whole 13 years I worked in there. They, you know, and I did things, and they don't pay you. You get paid probably 6 cents an hour, and you mop, you know, and things like that. So when I reflect back on that thing of washing toilets and cleaning floors for 6 cents an hour, and you know, you calling home to try to get money to come for commissary, and nobody answering, and the numbers don't change. I mean, you don't want to go back to that place. So, you know, that what keeps me really, really keep it going, you know, and all that. Out of these last 2 years, I done had about, I'm going to say, 5 jobs, and, you know, each one, it gets better. Time. Right now, I'm a specialist in sewing. I work for a manufacturing light company where we build lamps for scratch, and you know, it's world renowned. So, you know, I just keep God first, and I keep my support team. I keep talking to my brother, and you know, I talk to people like that. You know, keep it going, but it definitely is a challenge. You just gotta just reach out, people. You know. A lot of these resources, they got a lot of resources for reentry programs. People just got to look them up and go for it.
All right, let me go to a few of the other people. We have, I don't know everybody's number by heart. I'm going to call out the last four digits of your number, 7979. What's your name and where you calling from?
Wait,
7979. Would you like to make a statement or ask a question?
Yeah.
All right, Audrey. Hello?
Hello.
Audrey. What are your thoughts about some of the things that you've heard, and what the society, what kind of obligation does society have to helping these 2,000 people that we have incarcerated? I mean 2 million.
Yes. Supreme Sunday to everyone, and first thank you to everyone who has shared, and to our brothers who have been incarcerated and who are now released and are sharing their story and their experiences with us. I want to say thank you for allowing your experiences to improve and help someone else along the way. That's what life is all about. So thank you. James, this topic is one of the things that Brother said at the beginning of the show had to do with the importance of us as a family talking and getting to know each other and setting the right role models in place and learning our history. I mean, so many valuable things have been said, because without that, when our brothers and our sisters are incarcerated, that impacts the family. And it touched my heart that the mother's love for her son is in reality what kept the son moving. And now the son is again touching lives. And I say that to say that we are touching each other's lives every day, every moment. And Brother Jones, I want to just say thank you again for sharing, and your wife is just beautiful, but I thank you for keeping it real as it relates to a lot of times people going to church. If you can get a pass, hey, somebody can sign off for you. I mean, that's real. So thank you so much for sharing, and I just know that the Lord will continue to use you. But James, my main concern is from the preventive measure. And we prevent, again, by making sure that we communicate regular. We learn from our brothers and sisters, and we make sure that we teach. And it's more than one way to teach. We have to have community organizations. We have to start right with our family. And, you know, if we just take one person and mentor and make a positive difference in their lives, because especially our young men, I think someone said earlier the importance of the right role model. Our young men, not only to teach men how to be men, But, you know, we as women, we want real men. We want men that know how to treat us. We want men that want to work together and achieve something. But that have to be taught. I can go on and on, but I think my comment, James, have to do with being preventive, communicating, and taking responsibility of us learning our history.
All right. I got some numbers down that I'm not familiar with, and I'm just going to call out the last four digits of your number. Well, that person just disappeared. Let me go back to Brother Jones. Let me ask you, we had Terrence. Was your experience similar to Terrence's? You were on the West Coast, and Terrence is on the East Coast. So it'll be interesting to know whether or not the systems work about the same.
Good afternoon, James. You know, he got out of the car. He's in another car, and he's not connected to the line. But from what the brother Terrence was saying, it's the exact same thing as far as them being inside of the the halfway house and the visits, going to visit and the letters and how they had to have an agenda or a job in order to get out, you know, to have time out. But basically it was the exact same things that, as Brother Terrence said, yes.
Okay. What more you said that we shouldn't count on the federal government or our local state government, that more needs to be done in the community to help them transition? How do we, again, encourage them even beyond? I mean, why shouldn't all the churches that we have, why shouldn't they be willing to accept two or three or four or five inmates as an opportunity to help groom people away from that kind of environment?
Well, they should. They should be helping them before they even get involved with that environment. You know, unfortunately, you know, we relegated those responsibilities to the state, to the welfare systems, or to the programs, or to this. And these are things that we need to actively be involved with ourselves in terms of our curtailing, so that we could, you know, create this edifice for ourselves. You know, another thing about programs is that although they might be, you know, their mission statements and vision statements might, you know, be altruistic in this statement, but how they run and conduct it are two different things. And, you know, in a capitalist society, you know, money is the root of, you know, the defining root of the motivator of everything. So much of the services are shoddy. Why? Because, you know, people, you know, want to, you know, cut their budgets and things of that, you know, nature. So we have to understand that, you know, that we just can't look at these programs and say, oh, that's the solution. You know, those programs are going to work as actively better as we work, as we hold them responsible and accountable. You know, we have to hold ourselves to accountability. We have to start, you know, holding our communities, you know, holding our schools, holding our teachers. You know, we have to start, you know, this is aggregate. We have so many different things that we have to get involved with to start creating an edifice that will make our community, that will ameliorate the problems that we see in our community. So that, you know, it starts there. You know, and you know, you know, it's like, and you know, like what Terrence said, you know, that's the heartfelt tragic thing of, you know, people being incarcerated. You know, how, you know what I mean? You know how you got loved ones, and you know they're going through pain. They didn't commit a crime, but they're going through pain. They're going through. And it's not even their fault, because why? It's the environment that we live in. These things were purposely, you know, instituted in our community so that they would suck snatch people away, like me and Terrence, away from our loved ones, and create that void, and create, and you know what I'm saying, create that void that we weren't be able to fill in our community, so we could be better symbols and examples. We needed better symbols and examples to follow. You know, we got to realize when we go through stages in life, when we go through society, you know, we grew up in an environment where there was no law. It wasn't today. You know what I mean? You know, we grew up in a society where cops were crooked. You know what I mean? Like, you know, people forget that now, you know, because they got all this Law and Order and all these other kind of TV shows, you know, but that was the reason for them. Because of the Serpico, because of the, I forgot the other, I think it was the French Connection, you know, when they had the police involved with, you know, drug trafficking, because of what happened with Larry Davis and these things. So we have to remember the police force used to be very dirty, you know what I mean? And you know, they actually helped, you know, precipitate some of the crimes that we, much of the crime that we see in our community. So, you know, it's just about, you know, we have to start, you know, allowing politicians to placate us with more police and start placating us with more employment. And not just jobs, we need industry. We don't just need jobs, we need industries. We need control of certain industries. I mean, there's so many industries that, you know, that certain ethnic groups have control of, and we don't have control of anything. So, you know, we have to start looking at that, not just as jobs. We have to start looking at what industry do we control. Because if you look at it, you know, any industry that we're involved in, we're at the bottom level.
All right, let's take another break, and we're going to give everybody an opportunity to say their final word.
Hello, I'm the music major. This is my man, Jayon Gray. He got a question to ask you.
Is there anybody in love?
section brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. I have to tell you that somebody jumped on me right away that normally on Sundays I'm supposed to play gospel music. So I want y'all to always get on my case if it comes a Sunday and I'm not on my task. Cassie, you didn't do it this time, but Audrey was right on time. So I got it in there, and I'll try to get one more. We're going to go to Terrence. I want to ask you what your final thoughts are for this evening.
My final thoughts, Mr. Deshay, is you got to always own up to your responsibilities. Now, with that being said, you know, you did do the crime, right? And you do come out, and a lot of these reentry programs, you know, you just gotta want it. You just gotta want it. You gotta want to get on the ground. You gotta just go get it. You gotta have to do the resources yourself, and all that. Cause when you did the crime, the judge when he sentenced you, it's for you to pay your debt to society. Once you pay your debt to society, you go. And you suspect that people supposed to automatic help you out, but you have to also want it as well. And you got to believe, and you just got to have faith, and it's going to be challenging, and you just got to stay strong and believe. That's my final thoughts on it.
Okay.
You know, some people
and,
feel like
I wanna,
you know, yeah, that's
I want to encourage you, Terrence, to join us sometime during the week if you can, because your voice is one that we want to hear on a lot of different topics. So I just invite you to stay engaged when you can.
It's no problem, Mr. Deshay.
All right, Andre, what are your final thoughts for this evening?
I just want to say, the experiences and the encouragement that we've heard tonight about the different programs, what it takes, and recommendations on how to accomplish, your goals after being incarcerated. It's an indication that, you know, you may be in a place where you're not the happiest set, or you didn't really want to be, but your life is not over. And, again, we have to help and strengthen each other along the way. And if, indeed, we can prevent it, that's the best. But if not, we are here to support, encourage, and help each other. So, again, let's keep the communication going. Let's talk about our history and making sure we as a family are owning up to what our roles and responsibilities are.
All right. Sherry, your final thought for this evening?
I'd like to thank Mr. Higgins for educating us and the other gentlemen, other two gentlemen, for educating us on things that we were not aware of anything that we weren't, that now it helps us to be able where we can be more active in certain areas to let us be active in those areas. But as we always say, you know, it starts in the home. And if anything happens, let us continue to be great supporters to one another to help, you know, our brothers and sisters to go through whatever it is, especially if they're determined to do better once they are on the other side. So, again, as I always say, whatever we do, we can always do more.
All right. Kathy or Mr. Jones, are you there? You want to give us a final thought for this evening?
I'm here, James, and it's always a pleasure when Mr. Higgins come on and share what he's doing in the community and educate us on what it is we need to continue to do. And I will pray for him and also his brother. And just thinking about what the scripture says, am I my brother's keeper? And yes, I am my brother's keeper. So just to keep that in mind, that we are our brother's keeper. Amen.
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 Mr. Higgins, I just want to let you know you had me jumping today because your show combined with my callers, we had over 10 call-ins, and it was hard trying to get to everybody. I know a few people dropped off thinking I wasn't going to want to get on. But you had 10 callers, 10 or more callers on today. And so we are reaching out there, and more people are calling in. And we just want to encourage everybody, keep calling in, and I'll work hard to get your voice on. We don't try to interrupt people or cut people short. We want people to have the opportunity to get their whole opinion out there. So, Mr. Higgins, what is your final thought for this evening?
Well, I'm just thankful that we know that we opened this platform up to, you know, to start really touching base and start really understanding, you know, the different facets of the community. Like people like my brother and myself, although we were, you know, encapsulated in the life of crime, we were never bad people. You know what I mean? We were never, even the people that, you know, we were never lazy people. We were never lackluster people. We were just people that dealt, you know, that only saw opportunity one way from where we grew up at. So, and we got to understand that many of the people that we see in the community that do involve themselves in crime are not people who don't have any motivation. They just have their energy directed in the wrong direction. So we have to, you know, start, you know, giving these young people before they put their energies in these nefarious behaviors and start catching them prior to, because that's, you know, that's where they're at their most energy and they're confused and, you know what I'm saying, and they're looking for a sense of stability. So I'm just thankful for you, Mr. Deshay, that, you know, we have this platform and we need to continue to talk on this subject and subjects like these so that we can start creating a conduit of amelioration so we can start alleviating this. We could have the James J Show, you know, have been the conduit to start alleviating, you know, recidivism and, you know, and people going incarcerated in the first place. So I'm just thankful for you, Mr. Deshay, that we have this opportunity.
Well, I am so looking forward to our continued partnership with you calling in and being a guest host every other Sunday. And we want to merge and grow from that and go to the point where we got some young people. We talked about having a young people show so young people can come on and tell us what's going on with them. And well, they can better describe what the problem is so that we can figure out how to make a solution. Or how to get a solution. Again, I just want to thank all of those of you who called in to the show. I want you to understand how important it is to keep supporting me and the show so that your voices can be heard. And we look forward to seeing you all tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We're on the air 7 days a week, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m., Saturday at 8 p.m., and Sunday at 8:30 p.m. We want you here so your voice can be heard loud and clear. Take care, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Father, help your children and don't let them fall by the side of the road. Teach them to love one another, that heaven might find a place in their heart. 'Cause Jesus is love. He won't let you down, and I know He loves forever in my heart. We've got to walk on
temptation, 'cause he's love and his wisdom will be our helping hand. I know the truth and his word will be our salvation. Lift up our hearts to be thankful. Jesus is love.